Hey everybody, I'm Aaron.
I'm Dee, and combined, we're the Wonder Twins. For deliciously geeky fun
and mega nerdy hygiene,
follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Weekly episodes can be found on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play. We're the best little podcast in Texas, Joe.
We're the Wonder Twin Powers Activate Show.
We have reached the mountaintop. We have hit the peak of it's all downhill from here, ladies and gentlemen. I am Andrew Farber with
and
me
I'm
as
Cole
always.
Houston, yes,
yeah,
on the pinnacle as we gaze down at the easy chapters that are ahead of us.
Though
the next chapter is a little bit convoluted, it'll still be a far simpler task.
When have we ever not been convoluted, though? This is Hey Kids Comics, by the way. Speaking of being convoluted,
That's right.
I think this is issue 269.
I believe you are right.
Damn, son, that's a lot of issues.
That is. This is, you know, every time we record one of these, we're pushing closer to that episode, to that issue where I need to get my ass in gear and grab a copy of Frank Miller's Sword and Sandals epic.
See, you're all about issue 300. I'm all about a very special issue coming up 33 issues after that one. that was one of my favorites, which I don't know if we've released it publicly yet, but we all know what 300 is going to be about. 333 is halfway to the beast. and I could not be happier for that. But tonight, we are halfway through a story arc, Roguish Eyes 2. What's the long title? What's the Doctor Strange Love title?
Roguish Eyes 2, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Inevitable Justice of Ignorance.
Whatever.
Crap.
It was great power.
Now, this is,
great.
That's right. Now, this is Roguish Eyes 2, Tangled Web, Part 3. Well armed, or as we like to call it here, Doc Ock Talk.
Well, we got some Ock Talk to do tonight, and
yeah,
to join us.
Caller, you're on Doc Ock Talk.
Caller, long time listener, first time caller. We've got a first time guest on Hey Kids Comics tonight. Oh, 7:30 in the morning. We got traffic on the 5s, the 10s, the 15s, 17s, 20s, 23s, and 25s. No, we are blessed tonight.
That's not enough. Yes,
we are blessed tonight. Cole went a little gorilla tonight and tricked a tricked a friend of the show into being on it tonight, which I thought was fantastic.
I thought it was fantastic that he fell into this little trap here, but this is some serious ambush podcasting.
Right.
Joining us tonight, of course, is Rancor Pit intern at large, or no, what's the term?
That joke?
Yeah.
Nobody could tell. This is audio.
I know the term you're looking for, and I can't think of it right now. I'm already punchy. It's probably all that black mold I've been inhaling.
I'll imagine. Amaretus.
Amaretto. Emeritus.
Emeritus.
Yeah. Oh, amaretto. Sour. Yeah.
The amaretto sour emeritus here himself. The intern from Hey Kids Comics Live, none other than Stephen Fett. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Were you given a choice?
Just you wait.
Cough twice if you're in trouble.
That's right.
Oh God, I'm gonna. There it is.
Code.
There it is. He got the podcaster's booty call. You up on Skype?
Yes.
And he leapt to the. He's our own personal Dunkirk.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you're floating your dinghy all the way. Wait.
yeah, he is. That beard, that lovely beard that he has, just I can hear it.
Aww.
Yeah, it's,
yeah. It misses you too, Andrew.
I know it. They our beards get like tangled up together like some kind of weird sexual Velcro. It tastes good. I don't know what that means. I'm getting weird. It's fine.
It's kind of like those old beard squeezings from
Yeah, Kenny Loggins beard squeezings. House on Pier Corner. So, tonight we talk about Doc Ock, and I could not be more excited for this issue. I didn't think I was going to be excited for this. I didn't think I was going to be excited for this issue. But I had this weird moment in doing the research for this. I did a lot of research for Doc Ock. I did a lot more research for Doc Ock than I thought I was going to, and I did a lot more research on Doc Ock than I wanted to. but I turned a corner on Doc Ock. I firmly believe that Doc Ock, I like Doc Ock maybe more than I like Spider-Man at this point. I have, really? What do you call it when you fall in with your captors?
He's sinkied here.
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, I definitely have Ockholm Syndrome. yeah. No, I'm dead serious. So we always talk about the backstory of the character and the inception of the character itself and where it came from and why it came into being. And I think the first thing we touch base on is this. And I'm finding this more and more as I research Spider-Man versus when we did Batman. And that's the name Otto Octavius came before the character.
Well, it has that wonderful kind of comic book alliteration going on. And then, you know, next thing you know, here comes... And so well paid tribute to in, Spider-Man 2?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's about a guy named Octavius getting four extra arms.
Right. But that's the weird thing, right? Is literally, and you're reading about it, and it's Stan Lee, so he's like, I don't remember anything, I'm Stan Lee. But, and this was like 30 years ago, he's like, I don't care, whatever, I made the character, just go suck it. But, I'll come to your little show. I'm Stan Lee. But he would come up with the names first. So Otto Octavius, when it was created, had nothing to do with Octopus. He came up with Otto Octavius and then sat for like 3 days going, what am I going to name this? What's my concept for this character? And it ended up, and he and Ditko got together and came up with, okay, well, we'll make him an Octopus Man. But how do you do that? And make it even believable for the time period, which was, you know, I think this was Spider-Man 11 or 12 when he was, 11 and 12 is when it was basically his entree in, you know, even that far back and make it believable. And this is how you do it. You make him a physicist that wasn't, and here's the reason. Okay. Damn it. I like this guy. Here's the reason he became Dr. Octopus. He became Dr. Octopus because he was a world-class nuclear physicist. He was a physicist and a world-class, just in general, blanket physicist that didn't have enough arms to get the shit done that he wanted to get done, so he invented more arms to do more.
Yeah, not only was he a brilliant and accomplished physicist, he was a hell of an engineer. I don't if that was... something he played around with. Maybe he was on one of those Robot Wars teams for a while when he was over at MIT. But the fact that he just kind of got messing around with the idea of having some, a little extra help, like one of those little X-Acto things with the little roach clips on it to help you hold small components while you're soldering or something.
Yeah.
Only on a larger scale. And, most guys would just make these kind of, like grabber claw.
Well, he'd hire, most guys would hire other people to help him. But yeah, nobody was as good as he was, so he couldn't trust anybody else. So he had to invent more arms, basically. They should have called him Old Johnny More Arms, is what they should have called him.
Instead of just having it as part of... a larger contraption, because generally when you're working with nuclear material, you're not just there, like, you know, it's not like the Potter's Wheel in Ghost.
God, I wish it was.
You're not just going to be sitting just there
listening to the Righteous Brothers. Just
yeah, I'm just, and all of a sudden, four more mechanical hands enter the scene. All of a sudden, it goes from like
a good mental image.
You have like a, you know, instead of a, it starts out as like a little vase, and it becomes this like really elaborate
ancient
urn.
Somebody call Eddie and get him to draw this. That is a brilliant mental image. So yeah, like,
I mean, you're not usually like right up intimately close to the materials, so you generally don't need your equipment attached to your person.
Right, but he didn't. So the what makes him a super, and I'm gonna put this in big quotes, right? A super, let's call him a villain. I loathe to call him that at this point, but I'm going to call him a villain. All right? I'm just going to put that out there. What makes him a super quote-unquote villain is that he was messing around with some radiation while he was wearing his harness there, wearing his Adam and Eve or Home Depot contraption.
It was actually a little of both.
It was a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll, and it got fused to him during a radiation leak or explosion. Got fused to his body and to his spine, and somehow through that fusing, he was able to control those arms instead of by remote control with his mind. Then, so okay, great, good. Now he has arms he can control with his mind, and now people start calling him a supervillain. I don't agree with that. Sorry, I don't agree with that.
Well, it's profiling.
It is absolutely profiling.
Well,
it is
that,
absolutely.
You know, once you get the extra arms and you start knocking over banks and stuff.
Well, but here's the thing, right? I'm going to defend this man. I'm going to defend this man. All right. This man had to turn to a life of crime. Because he was pushed into it because his entire life he was misunderstood and bullied, and he was smarter than everybody else. Here's the most interesting thing. Here's the thing I love about Doc Ock is, do you know the reason, Steven, do you know the reason that he's Spider-Man's arch nemesis? Do you have any idea?
No, I do not.
Right.
No.
Right. Neither does he. Because all he wanted to do was rob a few banks, and then Spider-Man, the reason that he goes toe-to-toe with Spider-Man every time is because Spider-Man foils every one of his plans, okay? Doc Ock spends months and months and months, you know, I got a question for you. Do you consider Frank Sinatra a villain?
No.
Only when he's hip deep with the mob.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you consider George Clooney a villain?
I think everyone does.
So you went and watched Ocean's 11 and 12 and thought that's the bad guy. Not Andy Garcia, but Johnny Ocean, right? That's all the same guy was doing. He would meticulously plan these heists, you know, spend months and months and months down to the second planning these heists. He had little Asian men inside of chip carts that would pop out and dance through the lasers like Catherine Zeta-Jones. And, you know, that's what the Sinister Six was. And then Spider-Man would show up and through a series of, like, extremely lucky, bumbling events, stop whatever it was, and all that does is infuriate the man. Like, he's like, with great power comes great responsibility, granted, but also apparently with great power becomes great just bumbling oaf luck that allows you to do this stuff.
Well, I do want to point out, though, that, you know, of all of the Spider-Man pantheon, Doc Ock has the shortest fuse. He's like hair trigger pissed off.
Wouldn't you be, though? I mean, honestly, wouldn't you be hair trigger pissed off if you were surrounded by the Rhino and Electro and Mysterio and all these Shocker?
A lot of O's.
Yeah, a lot of O's. A lot of O's, right? And the Shocker and these dumb idiots.
Chef Boyardee didn't have so many O's.
Damn it. Damn it. If you you're surrounded by these
it's
bubbling
so cheesy,
pools.
It's funny.
That's why we bring you on the show.
Thank you.
You can be the Ed McMahon.
You are definitely. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
But no, that I really have a problem. I've come full circle on Doc Ock. He might be one of my favorite characters in comic books at this point, just because he's so pissed off all the time, because he puts these great elaborate plans in place, like Batman level plans, and then Spider-Man comes through and goes deep de doop not deep, and just immediately destroys whatever plans he has. And then what? Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Go right ahead. I can do this for an hour, and I've done it in my head. This is very upsetting. I'm not saying he's not a monster.
Yeah. But no, but the thing about it is he's a fascinating character because he didn't – a lot of the villains were already – I mean, like, we talked about the Green Goblin. Even before he got all gobby, Osborn was a little bit, you know, he's like the Gordon Gekko of bad guys.
Right, right.
Greed and then all good. Of a sudden – and all of a sudden he's like, well, greed is not only is greed good, but green is good.
I'm just going to take this
for a lot. For lack of a better color, green is good. But, you know, he's already halfway there, maybe three quarters of the way there. Doc Ock didn't go study his ass off, number one, to get marginalized by a lot of other physicists just because he was a tub of lard. But number two, because, you know, he didn't set off to go into crime.
Right. He absolutely didn't.
Once he got bitten by the bug, as it were, then it becomes, you know, he has to be the smartest criminal out there.
Right. But he, and that's the thing, is it's not a matter of he just is the smartest criminal out there. He works at it. That's the thing that pisses me off, is that he works very, very hard at being the best of the best of all of Spider-Man's villains, and he's still marginalized.
Yes. Like, Rhino will get top billing in the Daily Bugle.
Right. Well, Spider-Man gets top billing in the Daily Bugle.
But it'd be like, you know, the headline, Rhino and Dr. Octopus attack Central Bank.
But think about, okay, well, let's take this to its event horizon, right? You're Dr. Octopus. You're Otto Octavius. In any other given situation, you would probably have some kind of Nobel Prize for physics or some sort of, you know, like crazy. You would be on the cover of National Geographic and, you know, Wired and whatever. But instead,
discover the world of science.
But instead, yeah, Nova at that period in time. But instead, Spider-Man in the Daily Bugle is getting top billing over you, you know, super villain fight between, you know, webbed menace Spider-Man and fat green dude with four extra arms on the Daily Bugle building, you know, news at 11. That, I mean, this poor guy was driven to this, and I want to get into motive a little bit, but I still think we need a little bit more on his backstory, but he was driven to this. To this life, not even to a life of crime, but he was driven to this competition with Spider-Man because of the fact that Spider-Man had these. It's almost Lex Lutherian in that Spider-Man has all these gifts, right? And he's not using them properly. And if Otto Octavius, which we find out later, if Otto Octavius were to have the same gifts, the same easy path in life that Spider-Man was given, and he didn't look the way he did or talk the way he did or have arms fused to him the way he did, you know, if he was taken more seriously or, you know, could get away with what Spider-Man did, think of the amazing things that Ock could do. So there was jealousy, but there was also...
I just see Johnny Whitaker singing If and I Was Spider-Man.
Right.
And like three people in the world will get that.
Yeah. Well, and damn it, I don't know why I imagine Spider-Man singing Wichita Lineman, but I do. I am a lineman for the county. I don't know why that's the thing that he
does. The Wichita Spider-Man is still on the line.
Yeah. See, there's something in that line that works there. What do you think, Steven? Yeah.
Honestly, that was a...
When I
that was a lot.
Yeah. Steve was like, I don't know much about Dr. Octopus.
And I really said, don't. I mean,
and I said, but you know, I mean, what you like, and which meant nothing
I do.
To anybody. But I really, one of the things I was hoping to in this, because we did kind of thrust you into the middle of this epic battle between Spidey and Doc Ock, is just with what little foreknowledge you have, and given especially Andy's just gushing admiration for Octavius, do you have any observations that now that you've been a little bit more schooled?
Well, I mean, to go back what Andy was saying, I still can't really see him as a good guy. I mean, he was robbing banks and, you know, he kidnapped, you know, what's her name? Mary Jane.
Oh, bunch of times. Bunch of times.
Yeah. And hell, he, you know, even attacked Aunt May in the movie.
Easy. We'll get into that later, my friend. That is a travesty. Yeah. There was a crime.
I know. Those movies are not great.
No. I actually thought that,
Alfred Molina was brilliant as Otto Octavius, and that was a great take on him. And as someone who watches a lot, and I mean a lot of movies, we are going to be touching on the cinematic Doc Ock as well. So don't feel like, you know, you aren't going to be able to fall back on that.
Cole has
okay,
had a
good.
Hard
That's
on
all
for
I
Alan
got.
Molina
Those are the only
like.
Bullets I have.
Cole has had a hard on for Molina like for 10 years. So since as long as I know him,
is you know from the moment he was thrown the whip and didn't throw the idol.
Oh God, that's right. I often forget that was him.
I know that was what was amazing. Your mind's blown back when that movie comes out, and they're like, "Remember this? That's Doc Ock." What the hell?
Well, you look at Molina's filmography. It's insane. He's been in everything, and he's been great. He's the Yaphet Kotto of not being Yaphet Kotto. Like, he's just been...
If you can't
so
be
much...
Yaphet Kotto, be Alfred Molina. Let's take a little aside and throw a bone over your way, Steven, and we'll talk a little bit about Sam Raimi's Doc Ock. And also, from a semi-cinematic standpoint, small screen, you said the only thing you knew about Dr. Octopus was a couple of episodes of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which I thought was brilliant. What a great aside there. So tell us a little bit about your personal encounters with one Otto Octavius.
Well, I went to school with him back in so long ago.
Yeah.
No.
We were in debate.
I mean... Debate Club, yes. Well, I mean, I really never got into the Spider-Man comic books as much as, you know, Batman and, you know, and mostly DC. But, I mean, I did like the, what's his name? Or I liked his character in the movie. I forgot what his name is, though.
Alfred Molina or Otto Octavius?
The one that played Dr.
Alfred
Octopus.
Molina. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even though I didn't really like those Spider-Man movies, I really liked how he did that character.
Thank you very much, because I was impressed with his performance.
It got a lot of...
It really was.
People trash-talked that, too, and they shouldn't have.
Because you actually...
I think they just trash-talked about it because it was in those movies. But, I mean, if you grab him and put him in, you know, like, the new Spider-Man movies with Tom Holland, I think it would have been great, you know, him being that Dr. Octopus in those movies.
I would love to see him reprise that role. One of the things I really loved is how they humanized him.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you fall in love with this guy while he's falling in love with Peter.
Thank you. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Andrew, you're right. He does have a, you know, in that movie, it does make him look like, he's doing horrible things, but he's still a good guy. He's just making bad choices.
He's a good guy making bad choices. Isn't that all of us? When you get down to the core, Isn't that why we're all here?
Well, when it's all of us.
You're getting deep with this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, anytime we have four extra arms, mechanical arms fused to us, is that not all of us?
That's right.
In those moments. But, you know, I think a lot of it was that they give you a character you can actually adore before he becomes partially driven by this weird, like, miniature Skynet that's this, like, self-aware girdle that starts to drive his ambitions. And they, you know, give him that redemption. It's sort of like a combination of a redemption scene and the end of Batman where you're like, you don't kill the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, this was still that period in cinematic comic book cinema where they're like, we're one and done. One and done.
We'll never come back to this guy.
Yeah.
What are we trying to build? A universe here? Yeah, you jackasses. Exactly. Right. It'll never work.
So, you know, you can't have your character survive to the end and meet a future character in prison or something like that. God forbid.
God forbid you pull a Daredevil and have your kingpin meet Punisher in the prison or whatever it might be. By the way, since we're on the topic of Spider-Man and we talked about Homecoming, did you guys, and this is off topic and something that we might have to do a one shot of later. But did you hear that it looks like the villain, now that this is always speculation, but did you hear that they're kind of fingering Mysterio as the villain for the next?
I saw somebody was in talks to play Mysterio, and I'm drawing a blank on who it was.
That's
well,
fantastic.
I heard they're thinking about Dr. Octopus for the next one, and supposedly it's going to be Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill has shown an interest in being Otto Octavius. Whether he's Octopus in the next one or the third one and they introduce him as Otto in this one, he has shown an interest in being Octavius, which is fantastic.
That could be fun, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, Dr. Otto Octavius is Spider-Man's Joker. Now, we talked about...
Goblin.
Well, we talked about Goblin, right? We talked about how Goblin is his arch nemesis, but I don't think that Goblin, the more I thought about it, I don't think that the Goblin is the Joker to Spider-Man's Batman. Because I don't think he tests Spider-Man that way.
Yeah, he's more just a full frontal assault kind of, I want to just, beat Spider-Man. I want to torture Spider-Man. But Joker... He wants to test the mettle of his opponent, and
best him. He wants to best him by he wants to make him more like the Joker. That's the narcissism of the Joker. He thinks if he can pull Batman into his world, then he has beat Batman at Batman's own game. And I think that that's why Octavius is the Joker to Spider-Man. Because at the end of the day, what you have are two geniuses battling it out.
Yeah.
And you have one genius who is absolutely meticulous. He's the master planner, right? And then you have this other guy who's really, really smart, wears pajamas, and hops around the city.
What? You know, that's an interesting observation on this sort of player on the other side, because I never really thought about, you forget sometimes that under the mask, Peter Parker's a freaking boy genius.
Super boy genius,
And he just like farts things out of his mind into the physical. You know, like, I was sitting around the house the other day, digesting that chicken that... Aunt May. Man, that was amazing rosemary chicken. But I get off topic. And I thought, you know what would be cool is like a big Spider-Man image flashlight thing that I could put in my belt. And it's like 6,000 foot candles.
Right.
And like, no, you don't. I mean, that sort of thing. Dr. Octopus is probably too long. Like, The hell? A spider signal? I was on my way to a heist. Now I've got to go check out what this jerk has invented.
Jackass using all of his genius that he obviously has, not to cure cancer, not to build a better mousetrap, not to go into
like material science, because obviously the kid knows his stuff when it comes to synthesizing materials.
Right. No, he's gonna make a dune buggy with his face on it. This son of a bitch, right?
That
here.
He can That's drive.
Well,
on.
He's also a teenager as well. I mean, you know how kids are stupid.
But Ock doesn't know that. Not right away. Not for a while.
Yeah, because the thing is, the trick there is he calls himself Spider Man, not Spider Teen. He's not like Preston Prez over at DC, the teen president of the United States.
I got to pull the plug on this show now, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great run.
It took 268 issues of this show for me to invoke the teenage president of the United States. Which pretty much breaks all constitutional law.
It does, yes.
Regarding the president, established from George Washington forward.
It's like, Richie Rich led a political coup?
Yeah, we're so desperate, the United States became Naboo.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great run. this has been the Rant Corpette.
So much for my 300.
No, but, you know, So here's another, so I want to touch base on two things here. Okay. I'm taking control of this particular issue. Apparently I'm very passionate, about this.
So I couldn't tell the entire time.
Neither of us could get a word in edgewise.
God,
so
I know,
just...
right? Well, Cole, do you want to talk about what the psychological, how we could have gotten a settled down, content Otto Octavius until Spider-Man went and jacked it up? Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I think we have to. I love your notes that it was ock blocking.
It's totally ock blocking.
That, yeah, Otto Octavius started to have a thing. He was a raisin chaser. Damn. And he went to use Catherine's brilliant term. He goes after the wizened Aunt May.
Well, he was no spring chicken either at that point.
That's true. He was getting on in years. But he was kind of like that, who was it, Dr. Heller in Mystery Men?
Yeah.
Like hanging out at the old folks' home. I'm here for the ladies. You can just see him like, you know, maybe they were having sponge bath night over at the old ladies' home. So he had some extra time. And he crossed paths with Aunt May at the park, and you know she's out there with a little baggie of breadcrumbs. He's out there with three baggies of breadcrumbs. He's such a show off.
What is
you come here
before,
off for?
Before yeah. We don't.
And all of a sudden he's putting like three arms around her real nonchalantly.
Before we get into, and I do want to talk about it, but what is up with Spider-Man's rogues gallery and like three-fourths of them being a septuagenarian or above?
Well, he does. Yeah, well, in the next issue, we'll be talking about a few of the old geezers that donned costumes or tech or armor or what have you. That's a good point. It's like, you know, if you're the old-timers' day.
Yeah, what is up with that? I'm so confused. Like, you do, like, Vulture, Ock. Even Kraven, at the point at which he's probably in his 50s, he's like Alan Quartermain.
Yeah, he's like retiring from his big game hunting, so he's got the point, you know, now where the kick on the elephant gun will break his shoulder. So
and he's still jumping off of buildings with spears and shit. This guy.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, these old dudes who just don't know how to give up.
Yelling, 50 is the new 30.
And I don't.
Well, I don't know. I mean. They always say, like, after you retire, you got to keep working and stuff. Or
well, that's true.
Maybe that's what's going on. He's like, I don't want to die, you know, too old, so let me keep on doing this.
All right.
I'd rather hunt down Spider-Man with murderous intent than
go play golf.
Or then go, like, play chess in the park with Stan Lee.
All right, so talk to us about what you were talking to us about. Bring it back around.
But yeah, we're talking about one of those. There are milestones in Marvel Comics. The Demon in the Bottle is a milestone for Tony Stark / Iron Man. And the Raisin Chase.
Oh, God damn it, the Raisin Chase.
Or Raisin Hell. Is when the elderly Dr. Octopus took a shine to the even more elderly Methuselan Aunt May, who at this point was just edging up on this centenarian mark, and I think you may be right. I think it would have been not at all ironic if Dr. Octopus was an octogenarian. What are the chances that some octogenarian named Otto Octavius would get four more arms?
I can't with this disrespect that you're giving to Otto Octavius.
But yeah, he gets a thing for Aunt May, and Peter can't let it be.
Right.
Let it be. Let it be. There will be an answer. Let it be.
Yeah, so he has to, for no good reason, by the way. There's no good reason for it. He breaks up the marriage. He crashes the wedding.
No, he has the unmitigated gall to web the Bible during the ceremony.
Oh, man. Because and he I think that, that you know,
it took another 30 years for somebody to, you know, for in the pages of Savage Dragon for you to know you don't F with God.
That's true. That's true. We've talked about that for show. Oh, my God. No.
So, Stephen, were you previously aware of the impending nuptials, the Parker Octavius vows to be heard?
Not until now.
That's right.
How do you feel about this unholy union?
Well, again, I mean, I'm basing it off the movie. Aunt May's like, what, in her 60s, 70s?
Yeah.
She's like a little old lady. And Dr. Octopus in the movie, he looked like he was in his maybe late 40s, early 50s. So, I mean, does he have like a, you know, little guilt thing going on? Or what's going on with that? Like, I mean, how old is Dr. Octopus supposed to be?
I don't know. I think it was rather telling that he owned a Sharpay.
Also, this is that really weird period of time in Spider-Man's in the art of Spider-Man comics when his mask didn't have a covered eyes.
Oh, that's right.
So his eyes are just out there, like.
So it almost became very old Hollywood, where you know, I want to see his eyeballs. I want to see what he's thinking, what he's doing, what's going on behind the guy, what's going on behind the curtain there.
No, that's exactly
that
what it is.
Creepy.
Yeah, so he's got the full Spider-Man mask, but his eyes are open, like cut out, so you can see his like, it, you know, they're using it as a form of expression, so that you can see his, you know, so
his
can
sadness in his
more.
Eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or in this case, like the rage at seeing one of his arch enemies. Like, I think part of it is Peter's mind couldn't handle the thought of anyone ever seeing Aunt May naked at that age.
Oh.
I mean, he thought that Dr. Octopus was – there was something wrong upstairs before, and now – the man has to be stopped.
Right. Oh, God. And he saves their life at the wedding. He saves Aunt May's life. Granted, he had some ulterior motives. He had a plan, because he always has a plan. But, you know, Hammerhead tried to kidnap. Old Hammerhead tried to kidnap Aunt May, and he thwarts their plans. Like, all right. God, it just makes me really angry that he wasn't allowed to have happiness.
Well, I think that that's an interesting take, because the level of research you did painted a much broader picture. In many ways, I had the same sort of Dr. Octopus experience that, like, you know, I remember Doc Ock menacing the Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of issues of Spider-Man over the years where it was just, you know, knockdown dragouts. And I think that, again, Dr. Octopus is one of those interesting visual. We talked in the last issue about Sandman being just pure visuals, not much substance.
Right.
Because, you know, he's sand. But Doc Ock brings some visuals because Spider-Man's all of a sudden having to confront a foe who can attack him from multiple angles simultaneously.
Right, and not just with four arms. Like, you know, he's as smart as Spider-Man, which Spider-Man doesn't necessarily get. I mean, Norman Osborn was pretty smart, but he was also insane. You know, Sandman, not too bright. Shocker, Rhino, you know, your cavalcade of villains, not exactly a brain trust. but Ock could hold his own.
Yeah, in many ways, that sort of, as he becomes more acclimatized to being the bad guy, he becomes one of those alphas who, you know, is often the brains of every operation.
But that's, you know, and I think that's, again, thank you for supporting my point, Cole, in that you said acclimatized to being the bad guy, where I think that once you, you know, it's the revolving door prison system. It's the Arkham Asylum. It's, you know, it's the idea that once you've fallen in as a quote unquote bad guy, it's very hard to climb out of that. So he's the bad guy now. So he gets called in one of those weird warehouse auctions because they found a super adaptoid armor, and, you know, they were going to, you know, he gets the call and he's like, God, I gotta go. Like, it would be rude not to go.
Yeah, you know, Jackal and Hammerhead and Shocker.
Silvermane.
And Silvermane, yeah, all came to my party, so I kind of have to go to theirs.
Right. So recently there was an event that I think was, that for me, was the coolest, most interesting Doc Ock event in any Spider-Man comic. Except for maybe Secret Wars. Don't forget, he was in Secret Wars.
Yeah, he was in the Secret Wars.
Stupid Secret Wars. By the way, when you start watching the next, not to take away from the evergreen nature of our show, but when you start watching the next season of The Toys That Made Us, Jim Shooter is absolutely in the Transformers episode.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he's calmed down some. I'll give him that. But he's still Jim Shooter. Recently, probably my favorite Spider-Man event, 12-month event, happened. And that was Doc Ock's on his deathbed. Spider-Man finally, in Doc Ock's defeat, you know, goes to his enemy, like Spider-Man often does, and is the stalwart, great response, you know, great power, great responsibility. But upon going there and helping Doc Ock and trying to save Doc Ock's life and being unable to, Doc Ock pulls the old switcheroo, takes his consciousness and puts it into Peter Parker's body.
That was a fascinating read.
Oh, it's so good, Cole. It's so good. And here's I want your take on this, because I think it's really interesting, and there's one parallel that I drew that I think that you're going to be able to speak to better than anyone. His whole thing was, I'm going to have Spider-Man's political power, his stature within the community, his literal, you know, powers, and my genius, and we're going to see what we can do with that. And he does everything. It's what if Spider-Man had the intelligence and the drive of Dr. Octopus, and it's bananas. He does everything.
Well, it's ultimately what you were positing at the opening of the show is, you know, I could do this better. if right. I had your physique and your powers, and especially now a much more mature and established Spider-Man, it puts Doc Ock in the position of, well, you know, here's an actual Avenger.
Right.
You know, so you get like, you go over to like Spago and they give you a table.
I'm attractive now.
Yeah.
Like I'm an attractive guy now that knows Tony Stark, that knows Captain America, that I can immediately turn and parlay that into creating a business called Parker Industries that'll rival Tony Stark's business.
Yeah.
Almost immediately I can do that. And he does. And he absolutely creates a multi-billion dollar industry within about 6 months. So good. It's so good. But the part, Cole, that I wanted you to really speak to was the idea that because Parker's consciousness stayed kind of in the back of the mind of what was Spider-Man at that point, the Doc Ock Spider-Man, you had a, what I can only compare it to is a Etrigan Jason Blood dynamic.
Yeah. So you have that kind of two minds, one body.
But also an influence. So what happens is Parker has an influence over what's happening. So he's pulling him towards doing heroics, pulling him towards being better, pulling him towards towards being more responsible. You know, the great, with great power comes great responsibility, to the point where he's almost a hero, you know, in this, where superior Spider-Man, quote unquote, is almost a hero. I really do feel like I'm just talking way too much right now, so I'm going to stop.
Oh,
talking.
Yeah.
I'm learning so much about Dr. Octopus. I never knew about.
What questions do you have, Steven?
Well, now that I heard about this, that he got into the mind of Spider-Man, is this the same one that was trying to marry Aunt May?
That, and if so, thank you.
Is there awkward, like, hey, Peter, hey, Aunt May?
Oh, that's so gross. Why? Why did you have to bring that up? I wasn't going to...
Hey, you brought a lot of things into my head that I did not want to know, but now it's going to come out. I did not know that Dr. Octopus was trying to marry Aunt May. And also, I mean, like, is Peter Parker fighting Dr. Octopus in, like, you know, like a mental mind fight, like trying to take back over his body, or like how does Peter Parker come back to being Peter, you know, Spider-Man again, and Dr. Octopus finally just dies off?
Okay. I can answer that.
I bet you could.
Dude, why did you have to go to that weird place now he's in Peter Parker's body and he was trying to marry Aunt May, like, in comic book terms, like 6 years ago?
Hey, you guys made the call to me. You know where I'm going to go with this.
That's true.
I can go darker.
Please do. Please do. So it's a, so have you seen the best point A to point B I can give you here? Okay, is have you seen Get Out?
Yes.
Okay, that's
not. Oh.
Think about
it. I tried to watch it on Netflix or something, and it the transmission wasn't working properly or something, and it's like, okay, well, I'll try again later.
So does that make more sense?
It does now.
Okay, so he's just he's trapped in there with some level of influence, and he's and slowly building. Cole, do you have an analogy here that you can use that might be better?
That worked really well.
Okay,
I like the or from a different standpoint, you mentioned this sort of being like the Etrigan kind of thing, right. And it goes back to Alan Moore's brilliant interpretation of the dichotomy between the human Jason Blood, the vessel into this world for the demon Etrigan, who and he bemoans this deal that he'd struck. I've talked about on the show before where he agrees that he'll become more like Etrigan in exchange for which Etrigan will become more like him, in the hopes that you create a more even kind of pairing of entities.
Right.
And, of course, being a demon, he's an ultimate trickster himself. And, of course, Jason Blood becomes more like the demon, and the demon becomes more like Jason Blood, becoming more like the demon.
So good. It's so good, though.
So it's sort of like this. One becomes 50-50. The other becomes, you know, 75-25 by virtue of the dilution. So
that's so cool. It's such a good
idea. And I think that this is sort of the transverse of that, where you have, it sounds like you have Peter influencing and creating a better Octavius. Does Otto manage to Gilligan's Island and body jump back into his own?
His physical form is done. So it's okay. Like cancer ridden.
So he's like Arnim Zolid at this point. He's just a yes. Consciousness.
Very good. Yes, exactly. I hadn't put that.
And they
together.
Put him in an old spider sling.
They did.
They put him in an old spider slayer.
Yeah, at one point, but he has another. He has a clone. They got a hold of one of the 3,782 Spider-Man clones that the Jackal made. Was it the Jackal that made him, or was it?
I think so. I think it was the Jackal because he's one of the smarter guys out there, and it's the sort of Jango Fett thing he'd have done.
Exactly. It's exactly right.
So Jango, or as people in the Star Wars on the Rancor Pit, we would have said he'd been Riley'd, or you know the Geonosians Ben Riley, or not Geonosians, the Cloners Ben Riley'd Jango Fett.
Ben Riley'd. I'm the real Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We should just have Steven on the show about once every month and just drop like the weirdest comic knowledge we can on him just to see how he reacts.
Yeah, we'll just like force your education.
Well, I'm gonna come right back to Aunt May every time now.
Especially now, when we talk about Ben Riley.
Yeah.
Now, quick question: are we talking about Aunt May like old lady, or are we talking about Aunt May in the Spider-Man Homecoming?
Okay, you know how they'll do those age progressions, like, you know, here's what you'll look like in 40 years from a photo?
Yeah.
Take Jessica Tandy in the Spider-Man in the Sam Raimi movies and age progress her 40 years.
Oh, now I'm sad.
Yeah, it's like a golden raisin.
Damn it. Damn it. It's like a golden raisin.
Golden raisin.
Do you know those horror movies where it'll jump scare you because it'll be like the ghost is there, but it's the ghost of like an old woman, but then all of a sudden it gets all scary, like, and it jumps out and it like looks all decomposed and old?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that.
Let me give you some perspective. There used to be a newspaper called the Comics Buyer's Guide. And I believe that's where I saw this article, or it may have been in Amazing Heroes. But there was an article titled Aunt May Must Die. That article was written 30 years ago, and the woman is still kicking.
That's true. That's true.
And at the time that article was written, Aunt May had been ancient for the past 40 years.
And Aunt May was ancient when Spider-Man was hit paper for the first time.
Yeah. She started day one. I mean, even Uncle Ben was a raisin chaser because she had a good 20 years on him.
That term.
What?
Damn it, Catherine. I'm never going to forgive her for that.
The best, because Catherine and I will often have these like sort of, you know, friendly competition for wit. And raisin chaser is like one I always have to preface. I wish I could say that was mine, but. Dear
that's
God.
A credit where credit is due. That's boss. That's boss Nasta Mouth.
That is.
That's credit where credit is due. Is what Courtney Robinson, 2018 All Con. Just that's copyright stamp boss Nasta Mouth right now. So yeah, he's in a Spider-Man clone now as Superior Octopus or something.
Okay.
Where...
And this is actually weirder than that kid that was emulating him. Okay, you remember the Frogman's son?
Yes, 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 yes.
Gets a hold of the Springfoot Frogman costume.
Now we're just having fun with Steven. That's all we're doing.
Yeah. Now this is, you can't make this crap up. Somebody beat us to it. This guy with these like swim fins and a frog costume with the eye, you know, you would see out of the mouth of the frog, and it had giant like the spring shocks on an old van on the underside of his feet. And I guess the idea was he would like hop on down to the bank and rob it and hop away. And
boing.
Yeah, I just imagine. Was his headquarters called the Lily Pad? Right. At any rate, his son has a go at being Frogman, I think, and is failing miserably. And then I don't even remember if he donned the costume, but he did. He got really enamored of Doc Ock and made his own unfused Doc Ock arms. I guess, you know, hey, if Doc Ock can be portly and get away with being a super villain, I can too. And he has a go at it and is just roundly beaten. And then he gets all pissed off and destroys all of his. Yeah. And Dr. Octopus himself, God's truth, finds the torn up. He's like, someone has defaced posters of me. Where do you? It's like you go to like the Hot Topic, not a Hot Topic, to Spencer's and get like a poster of Charles Manson, or I probably could now that I think about it. But I mean, seriously, like, who publishes posters of supervillains? And he's all pissed off because he finds the remnants of a. Doc Ock cosplay.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man, like, this is weird because it's like what's going on in his head right now. Spidey turns him to good, and then he becomes like, he has like the four extra arms, but he's like, oh no, they're spider legs, not octopus legs. And he dresses around up in the like chunky Spider-Man costume.
Yeah, he does.
From like Big and Tall cosplay. And goes around as this sort of like half-ass Spidey wannabe.
That's true. I forgot about that. That is absolutely accurate.
It pisses Doc Ock off that, you know, his one fan, the one child in all the world that looked up to him and with admiration was turned by Spider-Man. Cue the short fuse.
But isn't that the story of Doc Ock? Like, in, you know, on a micro?
Everything I do, Spidey comes swinging in and just takes a big dump on it. just a big webby dump all over.
Oh, just a big stringy ropey dump all over.
There's a visual for you.
Just, oh my god, that's messed up. That's messed up.
So, Steven, you have entered into the bizarre and twisted world of Otto Octavius in ways you never imagined. I mean, Spider-Man and his amazing friends ill prepared you for this night.
It did. It did. I mean, you learned that he jumped into Peter Parker's body and tried to bang his aunt, who happens to be 160 now.
By Shire reckoning.
By Shire reckoning. He was going to have fourth breakfast, damn it.
God. So, Steven, at this point, you have had a chance to try to digest. And, you know, to carry this through in your sort of a mental digestive system straight through to the ropey webby afterburn. What are you coming away from Dr. Octopus with?
I
think he died.
Yeah, you too. We killed him.
Oh, thank God you're alive. Our investigation states that you killed him through Dr. Octopus.
Can you still consider him a good guy? He took over a teenager's body and running around being him in a teenager's body, I mean, can you still say he's a good guy?
I mean, can I or should I? Those are two. Let's compare him to.
Are you sure you and Andy weren't in debate club together? Because that's what's coming off here.
Yeah, this is. We're talking about Dr. Octopus. Why are you? I feel like this is very pointed. I feel like you're coming back with this.
Well, I mean, you say, you know, and from the beginning of the show, you're like, I think he's a good guy, but I'm still like, I mean, he's still considered a Spider-Man villain. I mean, can you still say he's a good guy? Kidnapping a teenager and brainwashing him into him being, you know, now Dr. Octopus in a teenager's body?
Well, also as your masterstroke, your final hurrah, you are at death's door. You've got four legs in the grave.
Yeah.
Mm. And you damn it. I had to damn it myself.
That was good. But
you know, you use this moment of sympathy to got your nose your enemy.
Right.
I mean, that's just some serious Rick Grimes shit right there.
But isn't this more a, I have an opportunity, okay, let me ask you this. If you knew that you could, if you were, let's say, to jump into, I don't know, let's just say the Rock's body, Steven. Let's say that you had the ability to go, to enter the Rock's body free and do with what you will, but you knew that the world would be better from you jumping into the Rock's body, and the Rock is not living up to his full potential with what he could be doing.
Yeah, like he does Tooth Fairy 2, for example.
Right.
And you feel compelling.
Andy, I do have to say, I love that you picked my Hollywood crush.
I know you very well. Let's say you felt like he was not being fast enough or furious enough, and you needed to handle that, and you thought that by jumping into his body you could right some wrongs. Wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
how
you would.
How dare you put a weighty moral question on this? That inevitably, I mean, if you were in his position and you had it in your means to, you know, you're dead for all intents and purposes, but there's a way, for some reason, you've got the weird super science where you can toss your brain into somebody else's body. The fact that you could get your enemy in the mix is a bonus, of course.
Sure.
But, you know, you would just so, you know, final scene of, what is it, X-Men United or whatever the hell that was, you would so Moria.
Moria. Let me add.
I guess you put it that way, but is that not still a dick move?
But let me add.
But it's a teenager. You still have to wait another three years to get out of high school.
Actually, at this stage in history, Pete's already graduated college, and
my mind is on a teenage boy that an old man's trying to get into. To be perverted like that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you know, nobody can just like come into the middle of this conversation.
Just cut it and just use it for whatever they want. let me add the creme brulee top. Let me turn the torch onto this creme brulee top.
I'm gonna
caramelize this for Steven. Now let's also imagine that you had just a mat on for the Rock's quadceptogenarian aunt, whose face just looks like a Halloween 3 version of B. Arthur's face, like a mask. Like,
oh my god! It's like B. Arthur had a baby with that jack-o'-lantern mask.
Like you're pretty sure you could just get a hold of that face and just flying squirrel right around your body and just wrap yourself in that warmth. Flapping loose skin.
Imagine a scene in Deadpool where they're trying to figure out a way to describe his face.
Yes. like
that's on me.
Like a hot Sharpay Sunday just right there for you, man. And you could just jump right into that body and just make
like
it its own porn
like
hot
a
category.
Flesh tone Goodyear tire.
Good, yes. Just like that. Just like a half melted beautiful candle just waiting for your face. Wouldn't you do that? Don't lie. Be honest.
Me personally?
Yes, you.
I think we all know that answer.
I think we do. Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
well, I mean, who could resist an older Estelle Getty?
We agree. To agree. Who could resist?
I mean, when I tell people my celebrity crush is Betty White, I'll say
so
back
true.
In the day, Betty White. I'm just saying now, Betty White.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with all of our celebrity crushes being the Golden Girls, we could definitely
That's
run
so
an Orient
true.
Express on TV Land.
But it's like if you took transparencies of, I mean, this is Aunt May in a nutshell. If you took a transparency of Clara Peller and put it over Estelle Getty, and then you, as Otto Octavius, in your secret heart, the one thing you want to hear is, where's the beef?
That cut was so deep it's septic. That's how deep that cut was.
That actually went even beyond just cutting to the bone. It actually incised.
Yeah, I mean the
marrow. Now, am I still in the Rock's body while all this is happening?
Oh, yes. Yes.
How could Ben White resist you?
I love the fact that Steven is just trying like hell to yes and this madness that we've created for him to live in, just still really leaning into it.
I know. This is why.
Oh, this is a walk in a park, what I usually think of. So.
We needed your brand of evil for this as well.
We did. Oh my God, I feel good about this, guys. I feel good about this. I think I won some people over tonight.
I think you did. I think we all look at Dr. Octopus in a whole new light.
We do. I'm happy. I think. Steven,
I have.
Steven, do you have any final thoughts that you want to close this show with, Steven?
In the Rock's body. Do I still get with Aunt May?
Yeah. I mean, sure. Why not?
You can shun. Okay. You can shun Betty White for Aunt May.
Yeah.
God.
I
am not sure what that sound Ropey. Was, but
that was the sound that Ropey makes. Cole, do you have any final thoughts? Do you have any poignant Jerry Springer final thoughts?
I just
have
to first choke down the vomit.
Right.
And then I could move on. I think that Dr. Octopus is one of those characters that so easily could have been a one-off, but he's benefited greatly by some just wild-ass stories.
Yeah.
Over the years. Yeah. As well as some, you know, authors taking a different look at this character. And Andy, you're right. You know, this is a character who is not a sympathetic villain like Sandman, but is still, there is more depth to his character than is necessarily obvious on the surface. So he's not just one of these cookie cutter villains who's out like knocking over 7-Eleven at the bank next door simultaneously.
Right.
Because he kind of like, he's handing off the note over at the bank while he's like getting a big bite and whatever you got in the cash register. I think that it's an interesting character, and going back to the cinema, the characterization on screen really, I think, captured the essence of what you're talking about, is an essentially just normal, albeit genius-level intellect, and obviously with some mad skills, individual who then goes through circumstances, gets drawn into this sort of gravity well of evil.
It's a great way to put it, man. It's a great way to put it.
I have no idea what I just said, so when I listen to this, I'm like, damn.
That's good. That was good. Impressed.
So, right. the Rock.
Let's go back to The Rock. So, Steven, is there any place that people can find you, or, you know, are you making appearances? Yeah.
I'm usually on the streets on weekends in Deep Elm and Dallas.
Just wandering aimlessly?
Yeah. But usually you can find me with Jedi Cole in his little world.
Yeah, and sad to say, no Infinicon for us until next year. But we will be back at AllCon. We're going to try to get Steven out for part of the G.I. Joe show coming up, the DFW G.I. Joe and action figure show in Great Plains, Texas, coming up in June. Go to cap-tx.info, check out the June listings, and check out the link. Larry Hama will be there. One of the great gods of G.I. Joe himself will tread the earth. And the Rancor Pit will be there. Not only will the Rancor Pit be there, but Dallas on Air will be there producing live streaming shows at the G.I. Joe show. This is going to be an unprecedented, amazing road trip for us all. There'll be a couple of Rancor Pit episodes produced during the course of the toy show, and probably a couple of Isle of Toys as well. And speaking of ambush podcasting, I put this to Steven, I put it to Catherine, and I'm going to, you know, insist on this. Starting with likely as early as some of the movies that we're all going to see right now, like Deadpool and Solo, I'm forcing Catherine and to bring back What'd You Think with her new co-host, Steven Fett.
Thank God. Yes. Thank God.
That's all I want. In the process of getting that done. I now have a job that will allow me to have an actual life.
God, that's all I want. I've been asking for this for so long. Nobody is more excited.
We have so missed it, and, you know, Bobby Blakey has taken on
way too much.
So, yeah, and he and Drusilla are doing Hollywood Matrimony amongst the billion other things the man does with his people hands and his people mind. And we will he'll be sorely missed, but I honestly think if anybody could fill those shoes and see as many movies, albeit not for free, Bobby Blakey. but it is none other than Steven, so we're really excited about that. And I keep talking about this. I'm on the cusp of getting Super Geek Out back on the JCU as well. So the Rancor Pit, we're getting that back on the audio. The audio Rancor Pit is up and running again with myself and Eddie Medina. So, and then, of course, over at Dallas on Air, the show that got its start here on the JCU, Figments, with Eddie and Colleen, the Cryptid Couple, on the first Sunday of every month, 9:30, 10:30 a.m. Central. The third Sunday of every month, my show, Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, like a shop in an aisle of a store. Isle of Toys, also 9:30, 10:30 a.m. The last episode, my dad was on the show, and it was amazing. And then the first and third Sundays of every month, the Rantcore Pit Live from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. All of that on DallasOnAir.com. We're coming to you from Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. I mentioned check out Convention Warriors Project Texas for all the great conventions. Over 100 again this year in the Lone Star State at cap-tx.info. And Andy takes care of a lot of the rest of the social media stuff.
HK Comics Show, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's all out there. You know, I often wonder these days, the more I check it out, how Eddie and Colleen must feel, because all I see are these ridiculous cryptid stories that just get posted and they get tagged in them. Like I gave blueberry bagels to a family of Bigfeet was one I saw recently. And just like all
the family or a family of Bigfoots, and they live in my backyard Canada, I believe.
And it's just every one of those stories gets Colleen and Eddie tagged, and I'm just like, your life must be so interesting. Like, next week, Cole, what are we doing?
We are bringing you the fourth and sub-final chapter That's a new term I coined all just now.
Subfinal.
the subfinal of this arc. We are bringing you Tangled Web 2 Part 4, Animal Kingdom. We are going all in on this one. It is going to be so chock full of characters, and I even thought of another that I'd forgotten about. If it's just a straight up and down animal name, then and they're a Spider-Man villain, and Spider-Man kind of got the lion's share of animal named characters, a few of which,
well, I know
part of the reason we had to do Dr. Octopus here was, number one, he's a pretty heavy hitter, and number two, by the rule of this episode, because he's not the Octopus, he's Dr. Octopus, he wouldn't have been able to be featured.
Right.
So suck on it, Venom. We kicked you off this episode because you're lame anyway. And we wanted to talk at full about Doc Ock, but expect things like Puma, the Lizard, the Beetle.
Yes.
The list goes on and on. I kept making the graphic for that and overlaying over our logo every animal character. And then I was looking at some Spider-Man covers tonight, like, son of a bitch. I forgot it, mainly because he's more associated with Daredevil, but he has been a Spider-Man villain, the Owl.
Ah, shit. The Owl's in there.
Talking about somebody like
Otto Octavius.
Oh, you won't believe one of the ones I found when I was researching. The Kangaroo.
Yes, yes. Does, now, I don't know this for sure. I don't know what the research is here. Cole has definitely stepped into the research game.
I'm a resident zoologist.
Did Razorback make his any appearances in Spider-Man?
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to look into that one.
Razorback.
Because there were certain ones that fell into a curious category.
Played by Mark Hamill.
Like Swarm. I didn't consider Swarm.
Yeah,
because
that's tough.
It's not the individual animal. It is the collective community thereof, or for example, vermin.
Oh, yes.
Is a term, a descriptor, not an actual animal. It's sort of why all of a sudden I had this sort of who am I thinking of now? John Travolta and Phenomenon. All of a sudden, thinking, naming off animals throughout the entire alphabet, and then pointing out that varmint isn't really an animal, it's just a term for an animal, and it got really weird there, and I got kind of nervous because I saw that movie, I know the outcome, so I'm trying to shy away from that, keep my brain healthy, so.
All right.
And then we have a surprise villain on the final chapter.
Yeah, we're not talking about it. We're gonna keep that one on the DL right up into the point where it gets released, because we can't let anybody know that, because it's so brilliant. It's Cole's masterstroke, and it's so good. It's so good. So,
stroke is good.
On that note, stroke is good. Yes. We're gonna call it Time of Death. It's time for Steven to jump into the Rock's body and have sex with the Rock's aunt. So we are out of here.
Spider-Man's aunt.
What? Whose aunt?
Spider-Man's.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Iron Man's aunt. I'm like, how did we just include Iron Man's aunt in this whole situation now too?
That's a whole other story.
Good Lord. Alright, everybody say goodnight.
Good night.
And we'll be back next week with more Hey Kids comments.